If you're craving nerdy tunes, we've got you covered. Nerdy FM is the Nerdy Show Network's nerd music podcast hosted by me, Mark with a C. We feature the best in geek rock, nerdcore, comedy, VGM, and every genre in between. The biggest artists alongside awesome up-and-comers with rare tracks, exclusive live recordings, and a massive archive to keep you rocking the nerd world over. Tune in exclusively through the Nerdy Show Network.
The following program is presented by The Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds and otaku across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Wicked Anime Podcast. This is episode 126, and we are driving home from Rhode Island Comic Con. I say we because I am your stupid awesome analyst, John Star, and with me is the anime noob. She didn't want me to call her that.
Hi, everyone.
So, we are about to head home from our long weekend. Veterans Day weekend. Thank you for all who served. I don't know, sleep. Because, man, it was a long, long weekend. And stressful at times. But it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. So we're going to talk about in this episode what we saw over the weekend. Maybe some cool panels, cool celebrities. And the whole lot of people that were there. So let's start off where we typically do whenever we do a con, post-con podcast. Things we bought. That's typically the things that we talk about. What did you buy?
So, this weekend, I actually did something new that I've never done before. I think, in the books now, I think I have been to about 10 conventions. I never buy prints from artists. It's just something that I don't do because I, personally, I take so many photos and I just never have a place to put them.
You buy the artist formerly known as Prince.
No. I appreciate his work of art, but I'm talking about the photographic, artistic, painting, drawing type of print.
Yeah.
So, as I'm sure has come about in some of our podcasts before, I am a huge fan of Hanna-Barbera and Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Animation, from a technical sense, is more for me. For you, though,
it's the fandom of Scooby-Doo. Grew up loving it. Adore it. Try to get my hands on as much collectible items as possible. This time, I was so excited because one of my favorite Scooby-Doo movies is quick and short and probably not the most memorable of them all. Scooby-Doo Goes to Hollywood.
Yeah.
The artist who actually was one of the animators on that film was there this year.
Yeah, Tom Cook. He...
Very nice guy.
Although it didn't seem like that for some time. He didn't know what he was doing there.
Oh yeah.
enjoying the retired life.
Well,
you know,
he did admit he had a cold. So if you had to stay in a large convention center,
yeah, sit behind a booth all day,
12 hours a day, I would probably be just as cranky and not feeling good either.
Yeah, but he was super awesome to talk to. We went to one of his panels.
We did.
And, you know, he was talking about animation industry stuff, which I was into, and I wanted to ask him, being, you know, that being my field, a lot of interesting, you know, questions that I think that a lot of people, like, he and I would have connected on them, but other people probably would have been like, oh my gosh, I just want to know what his favorite He-Man episode is. But, so I skipped out on those questions, but I was fascinated by everything because he worked on shows. Not only did he work on Scooby-Doo, mm-hmm. he even animated one of the scenes that you love the most, when Scooby dressed up as the Fonz. Mm-hmm. But he worked on He-Man, Masters of the Universe, and She-Ra. And he worked on the Smurfs, and he worked on
Tom and Jerry.
Tom and Jerry, yeah, which I thought was awesome.
He even talked about the new rules of animation and how as times changed, they couldn't show the cartoon characters hitting their heads because that, you know, consisted of violence, and they couldn't do stars around their heads anymore. So if you think about it in the progression of animation, if you think about the old cartoons and Tom and Jerry would like hit each other and a hammer would come out, he told us that as time went on, they couldn't do that anymore.
Yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, oh my gosh, you can totally tell the time and how, you know, time has passed as to when that changed.
Yeah. And it, yeah, he was talking about how Tom and Jerry needed to be friends now. They couldn't be enemies. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's really, it was really interesting to see, you know, that, well, to be honest, to be straight, that old look on animation, how the industry has changed over time. People ask really interesting questions, like how, you know, he felt about the episode. Like, he, if anybody remembers the cartoon Brave Star, the episode where one of his best friends died of a drug overdose, and how that affected, you know, how, was there any, you know, backlash on that? And he said there wasn't really, because, you know, that was real life. You know, back then it was a problem back then, and there were just weren't too many things attached to it, like, to hold on to back then, that, or any censorship like that. But there wasn't really much like that in cartoons back then to begin with.
Yeah.
But anyways, we're talking about stuff that we bought, and we got off on that.
So anyways, off of that tangent. So anyways, we, after going to the panel, or rather before going to the panel, we were able to stop by his booth again. He had a portfolio of his work and some different scenes and, panels that he's done, actual, you know, panels as well that were included in the film strips of the cartoons, and I was able to purchase four prints from Scooby-Doo across different cartoons that he had animated on. So it was really, really interesting. He signed them for me, and he wrote, you know, little catchphrases of Zoinks and Rutro.
There was the other thing that he did for you, though. He gave you a free print.
He did give me a free print because I couldn't decide between two. And part of me was like, maybe he's just trying to get me to go away. But I think he genuinely was just like, you know what, I'm taking it as I think he was a nice guy, but partially just go away. I didn't take that long.
Yeah, no, I really think that he appreciated the time and effort that you put into acknowledging his career. Because I think that there's a lost art in those who have animated for Hanna-Barbera at one time. Everybody's like, those cartoons are old. They're has-beens, you know?
Well, like, he kept saying, there's this thing called a pencil.
Yeah.
And which I think, you know, this John Starr and I, we've had this conversation before, that I really appreciate the older cartoons because I really like seeing, you know, the little mistakes or the little pencil lines that have made it into the final air, you know, the final airing of the show, because it just shows the originality. It shows the work and the effort that's really needed to be put into the animation. And it might not be as crisp and as clean and as fluid as, say, your more modern cartoons, but it just shows, like, the age and the talent.
Yep.
You know, and I think just seeing and talking to him, I really appreciated that, and I think he appreciated that, the fact that some people of our generation still have recognized that.
Right. So what I bought was pretty much a new wardrobe. I spent all my money.
Well, you bought a new wardrobe of things to hold your pants up.
Yeah, I spent all my money on seatbelt belts. If you've seen me at conventions before or in daily life, I am constantly wearing some kind of really crazy, you know, people go to work and they're known for wearing their crazy ties, you know, oh, today he's wearing a Christmas tie and it's July, you know, I wear belts that are really nerdy. I sported my Teen Titans belt all weekend, but I bought like a Sega Genesis one, I bought a Streets of Rage one, I bought two for Andrew, which was to Monster Hunter.
So your 27 is now going up to 67 because he needs to pay you back, right?
that's how much cash I have left. Yeah, so I bought some belts for Andrew too because I couldn't pass them up. I've never seen them before.
Pokeballs.
Oh yeah, that's right. I did. I bought one that was all the Pokeballs. And anyways, so yeah, I bought a whole bunch of belts and everything like that. They were selling a whole lot of Nendoroids there too. They were selling, you know, they had a lot of good anime stuff there, but they were overpriced, I think. I think they were very much overpriced. The typical price for a Nendoroid, when you find them, is like maybe around $45, and they were selling them for the upwards of $55 to $60. So I passed by on those. I bought a new board game. There were some really cool guys. They were the only booth selling board games there, and there was a brand new board game that was released based on the movie The Thing called Outpost 31. And it's a board game, almost like they were just explaining the Battlestar Galactica game. And Elijah Wood, who was one of the guests here this weekend, had done a really funny video on it in character about how to play the game, where you don't know who's infected and you have to try to figure out within this bunker before everybody's killed or everybody freezes to death. So I bought that because my family loves playing board games before Thanksgiving. So I bought that because Thanksgiving's right around the corner and we're going to play that. And we all love The Thing. Everybody in my family loves The Thing. Really great movie if nobody's ever seen it. Then, we did some haggling with them. Got a better price on them because they were also a little expensive. But that's okay because they were willing to haggle.
I think I made the guy a little sad, though. I have to admit something you didn't hear me say.
Oh?
I looked on Amazon, and I saw that the other game you were going to purchase was $20 cheaper online.
Right.
And I told the guy, because I said, I'm just letting you know, just in case other people say something, that that's the price online.
Yeah.
And he's like, it was like a pause and like an awkward, like, facial expression change, and I'm like, I think I just ruined this guy's day. Oh my God. And he's like, well, I gave up on Amazon a long time ago. He's like, but Amazon... If with Amazon you don't have a guy telling you about the game who like has never played it before, and I'm like, all right, well, clearly I hit a nerve. And sorry.
Shame on you.
You're bringing
truth to light, and they don't like that.
Well, you know what? I thought it was just a nice thing as to, hey, maybe if you bring your price down by like $5, it's like even a bit more competitively priced, because if you have 2-day prime shipping, you can wait 2 days to get a game that's been out for over 2 years.
Oh, you know, you're going to have to start going to more cons. I don't think 10's enough cons for you, because you got to realize that you have to post things up at least $20 in order to buy them.
I understand that. And that's why I don't usually buy things, because yeah. I am a bargain shopper.
And you did want a mystery box today, though.
I did, but you know what I did? And I did this on purpose, because I knew the psychological cycle of mine. If I kept going back and I was like waiting for the price to drop, clearly it wasn't, because it was a Harry Potter one.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, I go back, I'm like, I'm going to do it. I saved enough money. I have it. And
you,
then it
you
was.
You psyched yourself up. It's like, we're going to get a mystery box.
Well, because they were like, it has blankets and it can have a lanyard. And I'm like, oh, I could have a good lanyard. And it could have hats or socks or glasses. I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm going to do it. Sold out.
Yeah.
Which I was actually quite disappointed, but now I'm realizing I didn't need to spend that $44.
Yeah.
Now I can buy myself gas this week.
Well, these people that we're talking about are really cool. They're a company called Toink, I think it was called. T-O-Y-N-K. Toink. Toink.com. And they sell themed mystery boxes. You can typically find their booth from a mile away because it's usually stacked all the way to the ceiling with these boxes that look like Mario coin boxes, Nintendo controllers. They had Overwatch boxes, horror-themed boxes that looked like the cube from Hellraiser. So they had all these different themed boxes that you could buy, and I see people with them all the time.
Yeah.
Every single person around the con has one. And I just like, I don't know what they're about, but I guess they've got some really awesome stuff in them because everybody has them. And that stack of boxes that they have is not to the ceiling by the end of the weekend.
No.
It's amazing how much money they have.
It was amazing. From the time we got in line to go from the Al Yankovic panel, which was at 1 o'clock, to... four.
Yeah.
When we went back down, we were getting ready to leave and everything, and they went from being fully stocked to literally nothing.
Yeah.
Like empty shelves. Like there might have been 20 out of like the 1,000 that they brought with them.
They might be the best impulse buy. That could be the reason. It's like, we only have an hour left until the con closes.
It's a gamble.
Yeah.
And the thing that I kept saying was like, I don't want to carry this thing around with me. So I'm going to go, and I guarantee you that was literally everyone else's thought.
Yep.
Was like, I'm going to get it on my way out, because who wants to carry around a 2-foot by 1-foot box?
Yeah. Let's backtrack to something you just said a little while ago.
Yeah.
We went to a Weird Al Yankovic panel because he was here this weekend.
He did.
Now...
Well, I went to part of one.
Because you wanted to be sure that you were in line for the one after that, which was Back to the Future, which
Correct.
We'll talk about in a second.
Yes.
So the Weird Al Yankovic panel, I've always wanted to see... This is the first time in my life that I've seen Weird Al Yankovic
really?
Live.
I thought you've seen him before.
No, I've never been to a concert. I've never met him. I've never seen him face to face. We have interviewed him, I say we, as in the Nerdy Show Network, has interviewed him multiple times, and you can find Nerdy Show, Cap from Nerdy Show, interviewing with him at least twice, maybe three times.
Wow.
They usually do it when a new CD comes out. But he's been present on the Nerdy Show Network before, but I've never seen him live before, and this was my first chance to do that. And there were... The entire panel, which was hosted by Doug Walker, who's a nostalgia critic, saw him a couple times this weekend, too.
Mm-hmm.
Which we could talk about the other panel that he hosted in a little bit. We saw a lot of panels this weekend. This is probably the most panels I've ever been to at a convention since starting going to conventions.
Yeah.
We saw a ton. So Weird Al was up on stage, and there were like 50,000 questions that needed to be asked.
Yeah.
And it went immediately to the fans. So, you know, it's like, you know, questions that were like, what's your favorite song, Weird Al? You know, how do you make a parody, Weird Al? And I think that the reason that, because of that, Weird Al was up there and he was just like going through each question very quickly, just giving a quick answer so that he could get to all 50,000 of the questions, because there were a ton of people waiting to ask questions.
I felt like it was an awkward meet and greet.
Yeah,
like
kind
we
of.
We were watching the meet and greet Weird Al.
I was kind of disappointed, but
yeah.
I went last year when we saw Alice Cooper, the other
yes.
musician who was there.
Yes.
He was telling these awesome stories about golf and how he plays golf 6 days a week, and you know how the drummer from The Who would sleep over his mom's house and everything like that. We didn't get any of that from Weird Al. We
yeah.
just got like short. One sentence, bite-sized, you know, answers, and it was kind of boring, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I mean, Weird Al had that funny Weird Al vibe to him. He said, you know, like, somebody asked him a really good question. It was like, how do you stay so young-looking, and how are you so healthy? And he was like, well, I'm in my, you know, my stasis chamber for, you know, for 22 hours a day, and then I make an appearance, which I thought was funny. And then he was like, and I also don't do cocaine.
Yeah.
You know, so he was saying things like that. Which were really funny Weird Al quips, but he could have, like he didn't have that storytelling flair, you know, that...
I do wonder, though, if it wasn't his idea to do that. I'm wondering if it was maybe the structure of whoever organized...
Absolutely.
Whoever organized the panel for him.
Absolutely, because, I mean, like I said, we've interviewed Weird Al on the Nerdy Show Network before, and it's gone completely different, you know? They've been some great episodes, some very entertaining episodes, and this just wasn't the place for that, I guess. I don't know. Do we want to talk about the panel that we saw directly after Weird Al, though?
Yeah.
Which was the Back to the Future panel.
Yes.
Because this weekend, Christopher Lloyd and Tom Wilson were here.
Mm-hmm.
Which, they were both very entertaining.
In different ways.
Tom Wilson, who played Biff in Back to the Future, killed it. He was up there controlling that audience. He was nailing...
He could have been the moderator.
Oh, yeah.
He was very... He was, like... The one thing I loved about it... Now, Christopher Lloyd, in my opinion, is a comic genius in his own right.
Yes.
He is an interesting soul,
yep.
to say the least. Tom Wilson had his back.
Yes.
When he couldn't hear the questions or he didn't understand. He just, like, it's clear they work together once in a while, that they can just gel and vibe together. And they, they just had a great panel.
They did. Christopher Lloyd has slowed down a lot. He's definitely showing his age, unfortunately. But he was up there making the best of it, having a great time, you know, and
a little raunchy for, I think, the audience that was there.
Yeah. I think that was kind of like his old man mentality vibe, I don't care anymore, I'm retired sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, when you're... It was a little awkward. I was sitting next to a kid that was maybe 10, and he mentioned masturbation.
At one point. Yeah.
And it was just like, I don't think that this is what this panel was about.
I don't think that was what the original question was about either.
No, it was...
He went off on a tangent.
Yeah, and the tangent just didn't go well.
Yeah. But otherwise, I was very happy that we went to that panel.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was probably one of the best for the entire weekend. Mm-hmm. And it was just funny seeing their dynamic. I mean, I felt like that Tom Wilson could have, like, we could have spent an entire weekend just with him.
Yes.
Because he was so interesting. And super nice. He was talking about his experience on Back to the Future and how he was like, he was just there the entire time hoping he wasn't going to get fired because he enjoyed it so much. And he loved it. And how when Eric Stoltz got fired, and then Michael J. Fox took his place, and how he thought that, you know, when he was that Tom was going to be the one to get fired.
It had a totally different dynamic, and he just clearly appreciated the chance that he got to be on Back to the Future, because I think he said it was his first movie.
Yeah.
That he had ever been in.
Right.
And it was just different. It was a different dynamic, say, from the Princess Bride panel that we also went to.
Yeah, let's talk about the Princess Bride panel, which was also hosted by Doug Walker.
Yes.
And that one had, who was up there?
Wallace Shawn.
Yep. And Chris Sarandon was also on the panel, who played the prince.
Yes.
And so he and...
Wallace Shawn.
They were up on stage, and unfortunately, Cary Elwes was supposed to be here this weekend, but he canceled on the week before or something. Like, it was very soon.
It was, like, Thursday. He was...
Was it really that soon?
Yeah. He, I mean, it's possible he canceled earlier, and they just didn't post it.
Yep. Which I'm super bummed about, because... But then again, that panel would have been so much more crowded if Cary Elwes...
It already was.
It was already a packed panel.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, the organization of the lines in this place is, granted, very hard to manage because the convention center is set up very strangely. Mm-hmm. But anyways, this panel, we learned something very interesting about Wallace Shawn, which I kind of assumed about him.
Don't ever ask the man to say inconceivable.
Yeah.
That
was the very first question that Doug asked him. He said, are you more tired of saying inconceivable or people asking you to say inconceivable? Something like that.
Yeah.
And he was just like, you know, it's just something that he made this analogy about a pretty girl being told she's pretty. Mm. It was something like that, right?
He said, you know, when you're 16 and you get told for the first time that you're pretty or that you're good looking, it's flattering.
Yeah.
It's almost nice. But he said every time when somebody comes up to you and says, you are really good looking.
Yeah.
And makes, he said it was almost, it's like that where it feels like you're dehumanized. And
you
you're
start
only,
to ask.
And you start to ask yourself, is this all that I am?
Right. Because he's a successful playwright and everything like
that.
Yeah,
apparently which I am also guilty of, and I feel bad for saying this because I don't really know him much else other than The Princess Bride.
Right.
So John Starr and I have actually kind of compiled a little list of all these different things that we're going to try to research and watch and just try to look into more, just because it's like we learn so much more about these actors and the other works that they've done just by going to these panels. And Wallace Shawn, just as an example, was one of these people that I felt like after listening to him and almost feeling that, you know, I feel that even though this movie is so iconic and such an important part of, I'm sure, his life and all the other people who have admired the movie for years and decades, because it was the 30th anniversary.
Yeah.
That it probably now is a disdain in his life.
Right.
You know, and that's just what I left feeling. Whereas the other actor who was there, he had a completely different tone.
Yeah.
Very grateful.
Chris Sarandon.
Thank you. Very grateful, very excited to be there, excited to talk about it with the fans.
Yeah.
I just think they had two totally different experiences. Well, for one thing, Wallace Shawn said that he was only in a third of the movie.
Yeah, right.
But the two of them did have very nice things to say about Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
They had very endearing stories about him as a person, his life, just, you know, the fact that this was one of the last movies that he was in, if not the last.
I think it was the last.
Okay, the last movie he was in before he passed. It was just, it was nice to hear. Just, again, not myself not really knowing much other than this man was, you know, had a disorder or disease that unfortunately ended his life early, but he was able to film the star in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, and they were able to get to know him, which was a great pleasure to them.
Yeah. Speaking of other successful people like that we didn't know that much about, let's talk about another one of those people, Curtis Armstrong.
Yes.
Who was amongst the entourage of the first panel that we saw for the entire convention, which was the Revenge of the Nerds panel.
Yes.
Which had, oh gosh, I think it would be impossible to name.
Robert Carradine.
Yeah, Robert Carradine was there. Andrew
Solis.
Is that how you spit it?
I think it's
Solis. Solis, yeah. Brian Toshi. Curtis Armstrong. Donald Gibb, who played Ogre. Nerds! Julia Montgomery. Larry Scott. Robert Carradine, which I always said. And Ted McGinley.
So Ted McGinley was there at the con, but he did not join them for the panel.
Right. He was not there at the panel. But, like, that is a really, really big majority of the cast.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh. And all of them are, like, actual real-life nerds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in all honesty, oh my gosh. Like Brian Toshi was, he's working on this renewable energy project.
Yeah.
And, like, that's going to be free energy and clean drinking water. That's like the size of a gas station that could feed an entire...
Wind power.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's completely wind powered, and the only byproducts are water and electricity.
Yeah.
How cool is that? And they also said that he invested in temporary tattoos, that he was one of the first investors in into popularity. Which, I mean, a lot of that was our childhood.
Yeah.
In the 90s.
That was a really fun panel.
And also, who knew that Curtis Armstrong was a Shakespearean-trained actor?
Right, yeah.
He's another one that...
He's a legit genius.
He's written books. And, I mean, I know Robert Carradine from Lizzie McGuire. So that's pretty much how knowledgeable I am on other people's careers.
Yeah, but, man, that was a fun panel, just listening to all those people and their stories. And I'm impressed how much content they got out of each person, being such a large cast of people.
So another thing with the Revenge of the Nerds was we got to meet one of the season 3 cast members.
That
was a
Colby.
Huge, yes, Revenge of the Nerds.
King of the Nerds was Curtis Armstrong and Robert Carradine's reality TV show on TBS that took real true life nerds and puts them on a reality game show where they are crowned King of the Nerd at the end of 8 episodes. And Colby, who we met, who was in the audience, excuse me, he was on season 3. He was on there because he was the world tournament champion.
Jeopardy.
A person of Jeopardy.
Yeah.
And he was also a high school teacher at the time, which was cool. And we got to meet him, and we saw him walking around the con. He was just a regular con attendee, but Curtis Armstrong gave him a shout-out in the audience because apparently you really get to know the cast members during that time, and, you know, like, they've hung out at each other's houses and stuff like that. And, you know, I actually applied, or I filled out an application form for season 3 of Revenge of the Nerds, King of the Nerds. And I'm kind of bummed that I didn't get to experience that, but it's also probably a blessing in disguise that I didn't get to experience it.
Yeah, because the stories that he told us, I mean, Reality TV does not sound as glamorous as you would
think. I don't think anybody really sees reality TV in a glamorous light anyways.
Well, yeah. But now just absolutely... I mean, he said it was a great experience, that he found it...
And he didn't get any ridicule from his students about being on it either.
Yes. And the thing that, you know, all questions aside, I am also a high school teacher, so we connected as well. It was just really exciting because we talked, you know, education shop for a few minutes afterwards, and I found that he was way more excited to talk about that with me than he was about, you know.
We shared resources and everything. It was awesome.
We shared resources. We have each other's emails.
It was awesome.
It was really cool. So I actually have an email to send when I get home.
Then, for me, we saw a voice acting panel. We saw I Know That Voice, which had Samantha Newark, who was the voice of Jem from Jem and the Holograms way back in the day. And it had Steve Bloom from Cowboy Bebop, which was a dream come true for me because I had never, like, that's one interview that we have yet to get, and we still haven't gotten it yet, but I got to meet the guy, which was awesome. And we found out that he was newly engaged to the other person on the panel, Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, who was also one of the very first voices I heard in anime, from who's the major from Ghost in the Shell. So, it, like, that entire cast of people up there was my early anime life. And it was just oh so wonderful. So I enjoyed that panel immensely. It was a very technical panel, by the way. It was a very technical panel about the art of being a voice actor, which was cool for me. For other people, like the little kids in the audience who want to hear about Star Wars Rebels, probably fell asleep somewhere in there, but I found it super interesting.
They were talking to them, though. They were very engaging
with
all age groups, which I appreciated.
I thought it was so cute when Mary Elizabeth McGlynn pointed down at the audience, into the audience at the two kids that were like, listen, when you grow up, you know, and was to giving them that whole spiel.
Yeah.
That I thought that was so cute. And also, Steve Bloom is starting a resource for people who want to start in voice acting. Very cheap, affordable, rather, I should say. Very affordable, and you know it's going to be good because Steve Bloom is one of the top dogs in the industry. And he said, after you take his course, then you would be able to really feel out whether or not this is for you. The other thing is, Dee Bradley Baker's website that he mentioned was soyouwannabeavoiceactor.com. I think it was something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Which was also a free course that you could take for finding out if that's really what you want to do. So, there was a lot of really good info in there. I was really happy to see Steve Bloom for the first time. I fanboyed, so.
It's really funny seeing him fanboy, by the way. Like, mine is different. Oh, can we switch to fangirling?
I know what you're going to talk about. And it's a panel that we have saved for the end.
We have not talked about it. So.
Go right ahead.
As a young woman of the 2000s, I was a huge, still am, huge fan of NSYNC.
Yep.
Unlike Backstreet, that has made a comeback, NSYNC still is near and dear to my heart. Joey Fatone.
Yep, the fat one was there.
So insulting.
He loves it.
He loves it, and he calls himself that too, which I think is hysterical. He was at Rhode Island Comic Con. He was the first person we visited because there was nobody there. Mm-hmm.
He was eating it up.
He is a sweetheart. Oh, my gosh. He is amazing. He took the time. He talked. John Starr was going to kill me because there was a glare in my photo, so I went back. We had a little inside joke, which was amazing. He didn't care. He took another photo with me. He personally tried cleaning my phone screen, even though I wasn't my phone that had the glare.
My favorite interaction of yours was when he originally said, no, you can't take that selfie with me. Kidding, of course, but no, you can't take another selfie with me. And you said, fine, I'm switching to Backstreet.
Yeah. And he was just like, well, then, yeah. I guess we'll have to take the photo. but it was great. He did clear up some disclaimer, you know, or information flaw, whatever, lack thereof, that he will not be performing at the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Just because Justin Timberlake is performing at the Super Bowl does not mean that NSYNC is performing at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, inside tearing up. He also said that if he ever had to do another tour with all the dancing and singing that he might die. but it did also, you know, we went to his panel, he was talking about his life as NSYNC, and it really, it, you know, as much as people say, you know, with other people lip-syncing, NSYNC actually did all of their singing and dancing.
And writing.
And writing. I actually did not know that.
Yep.
And that for those of you who have always just said, oh, they're just another boy band, no, they were actually and are musicians.
Yep.
And they worked together, they did their choreography, they did sing and dance and perform at all of their concerts.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I have a new respect, and I hope that you do, too.
Let's move on to some other things that we saw around the con that might, may or may not have been interesting.
Besides Joey Fatone, who I saw about 10 times, yes.
Oh, did you? We didn't mention that. Did you see Joey Fatone?
Oh, I saw him multiple times.
Wow, that's incredible.
I know, thank you. I sense your sarcasm, but I got a picture with him and I'm okay with it.
There was one thing that I was I found very funny, that there's a new trend now about... Maybe for the past 3 or 4 years, the trend of conventions altogether, not even Comic Cons, but Anime Cons as well, that it's like, oh, look, there's another Deadpool there.
There weren't as many this time.
There weren't. You know what was there now? Rick and Morty.
Yes.
Everybody is Rick and Morty now.
Yes.
Which actually makes sense in the context of the show because the show focuses a lot on infinite amount of universes and there can be an infinite amount of Ricks or Mortys. So it makes...
Spoiler!
No, that's what the show's about.
I've never seen it.
You'll see it in like 5 seconds.
Whatever.
You know? But that's the new trend, is everybody is some form of Rick and Morty now. That was like one of the, and we met a lot of them, and one of the things that I commented on was like, I was so impressed at how many different techniques there were to make Rick's unibrow. There was not a single way that I saw it done. You know, more than once. There were some that were painted on. There were some that were fabricated. There were some that were...
Might have been real.
Yeah. Yeah, right. But it was just really funny that that was the case. The days themselves... Friday was really comfortable for me. Like, there was a comfortable amount of people and, you know, we were, like, relaxed while we were there. And it's like, all right, this is cool. This is, like, a really good con to go to.
So it was an easy way to rev up.
Yeah.
There weren't that many people and we could move.
We got there early and, you know, we were able to get into the convention with moderate, you know, time.
It was like a half hour.
We waited, like, a half hour.
It wasn't bad.
And then Saturday rolls along.
Oh.
And we may or may not have been in Providence anymore when we reached the end of the line. We got there at 10 when the doors open.
Which was stupid on our part.
Yeah, we should have been there a little early.
But it was 21 degrees outside, so Fahrenheit, for those of you people who do Celsius.
Yep.
Canada.
We do have a couple people.
I know, that's why it was like Canada.
Yeah, to clarify.
So it was very, very cold, especially for the now somewhat middle of November. Very... seasonally abnormal.
Yeah.
So everyone was freezing. And we had to go up and down, I think, 3 city blocks.
Yep. Yep. We wrapped around 3 city blocks. 1, 2, 3, like around the entire building.
Yeah, six streets.
Yep. And we had to do each street twice because we had to go down the street, cross the street, and then go up the street again. And there was traffic in there.
Yeah.
Like, the traffic, cars actually going up and down those streets that we had to cross over in order to keep in line.
Yep.
Like, oh my gosh. It took us 75 minutes to get in on Saturday, which, yep, all things considered, how long the line was,
mm-hmm,
not that bad.
No.
But then there was Sunday, today, which we're, yep, recording, which wasn't bad. We got there at 9, and we waited an hour before the con opened up, and we actually got in at, like, what? It was, like, 10:10.
10:02
we got in?
Yep, 10:02.
Well, they started filtering in the line at, like, 9:45, 9:50.
Yeah, which was smart.
Very, and we were happy about that, but technically that was the longest we waited in line, but then again, the con wasn't open at the time. When we got there on Saturday, like, the con was open, and we waited 75 minutes to get in.
Yeah.
Met a lot of really nice people in line. We met a Punisher. Nick, who,
yeah,
the gentleman in the wheelchair who helped push up the hills Very, very kind man.
Everyone was just nerds.
Yeah, like, nerdy. That's actually what I was going for. Very nerdy. Very, very nerdy people.
But everyone was just friendly. Like, we were all cold together. Yeah. We were all just having a good time.
And the guy the guy who was the Punisher, who we were in line with, like, works a town over from us.
Yeah. It was just like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
You plow our streets. Thank
you. Yeah. Right. During the winter when we're snowed in, there's 8 feet of snow. But yeah.
Crowds were a little overwhelming. But the one thing that I loved, there was one panel that started a little bit late and it was delayed because the guest was still arriving. And they came out and they were asking us how our con experience was.
Yeah.
And if there was anything that we could report or any feedback that we could give them to send to the higher-ups.
Right.
And I have a friend who struggles with walking, has a physical disability. And I said, you know, we were trying to get him a disability accessibility pass. And there were some communication challenges with people understanding what these passes were.
Yeah.
But the fact that they were available was awesome.
It was.
Just the structure of the building didn't necessarily allow easy access back and forth between the Dunkin' Donuts Center and the Convention Center. But again, that's just the structure of the building. It's not what, you know, what people have done.
Right.
But I was able to bring up, you know, I think communication and the fact of, like, helping people understand the passes. And, you know, the feedback was taken with, you know, totally accepted it.
Yep.
And they owned that, you know, that's something that they can work on. But I think that's something that's great of any corporation or business who's trying to host this large of an event.
Yeah, and that was right before Tom Cook's panel, too.
It was.
There was, speaking of another, I thought we were actually gonna, I forgot about a panel that we went to, which was super interesting.
Oh, yes.
Didn't have a moderator because he was so lively. Jason Isaacs.
Yes.
Who played Lucius Malfoy. And Captain
Hook. And Peter Pan.
And, a whole bunch of other villains. From The Patriot. He was a bad guy in The Patriot. Stupid boy. Yeah, he's played the baddest of bad dudes, and he was probably the liveliest and most entertaining dude that we had ever met.
I'm so glad I lived over in England for 2 months, because that was the only way I was understanding his accent the whole time.
At sometimes.
Sometimes. But you know what? What was really funny, and he said it was a blessing and a curse at the same time, was whoever he's talking to, he switches to their accent.
Really?
Yes, didn't you hear that part of it? That there was, like, somebody asking him a question, and he switched to an American accent immediately?
That's funny, no.
And he said, he's like, sometimes it's really hard because I'm not trying to make fun of them.
That's really funny.
But the one thing I loved, the last question that they asked him of the day, if you could have dinner with anybody, who would it be? And he said his wife and his two daughters, because he doesn't see them nearly enough.
Yeah.
Aww.
It got 3,000 people going, aww, you know.
But it just shows you that regardless of how busy, regardless if you didn't see these people, these actors, voice actors, artists, everyone who was there are people just like you and I.
Yep, they go home and clean their toilets and do their laundry.
And this is their job, and we're lucky that we get to experience a little bit of it from them.
Right. Yeah. So, man, this is probably, like, the most panel talk we've ever had on a convention review.
You know what it is, though? I found the panels this year, there were a lot more of them.
There were a lot more of them, and the content was really good. So we found it very interesting to go there, you know, and we had done all of our shopping on Friday, really. So we had all the things that we wanted, and we didn't really want to be down in the dealer's room. So we were like, let's go see some panels. There were a lot of guests who canceled, though. This is one thing that I wanted to bring up, the guests that we canceled, but they all had really good reasons. Like, unfortunately, you missed out on, like, the Scooby-Doo cast that was going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Willard and
Freddie Prinze Jr.
They were supposed to have a Scooby-Doo panel, but that was canceled. Freddie Prinze Jr. had a family emergency. I don't know what was up with Matt Willard, but that was unfortunate. And then the entire cast of The Walking Dead. Norman Reedus was supposed to have his own entire wing of the convention center. There was a Walking Dead wing of the convention center. And Norman Reedus had his own booth in there, and he didn't show. Nobody from The Walking Dead showed up, but that's because the weather delayed the filming of the finale of the show, and therefore every single Walking Dead cast member had to cancel because they were still filming the show.
Crazy.
Unbelievable. I don't know. Is there anything else you want to mention about? Shout out to the 501st where James and Victoria were all weekend.
Oh, yeah. They raised a lot of money for some really
good on Friday, they raised $1,000 for their charity, which was great. So that's what we really got for this episode of the Wicked Anime Podcast. Rhode Island Comic Con, again, overwhelming with some of the amount of people that were there, but still like a really fun time.
Yeah.
Just like a lot of really awesome nerdy people getting together.
I also got a lot of, I got about 80 likes on Facebook about my Joey Fatone picture. So that was
Facebook famous.
That was pretty exciting. Oh no, our engagement post got about 400. So clearly we're way more excited.
So, that's it for this episode of the Wicked Anime Podcast. If you want to send us an email, if you were at Rhode Island Comic Con and you want to talk about something that you were there, you can email us at wickedanimereviews@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/wickedanime. Twitter, @YoWickedAnime. You can find us on YouTube.com, where all of our videos are, which is YouTube.com/wickedanimereviews. You can find us, our podcast, not only on Nerdy Show, where you can find our videos as well, nerdyshow.com/wickedanime. You can also find us on iTunes. Leave us a review and a 5-star rating, and we'll be sure to read it on the show. Even if it's not a 5-star rating, we'll read it on the show. Podchaser, which you can rate and review there as well. SoundCloud, Audio Boom, Stitcher, anywhere that you can find podcasts, you can find Wicked Anime and the rest of the shows on the Nerdy Show Network. And that's all we have for this episode of the Wicked Anime Podcast. We are sitting in a McDonald's parking lot because we need food. We are hungry and we need to go home and sleep and get ready for work tomorrow. So with that, we're going to sign off the only way we know how. Oh, in the next episode, by the way, before we sign off, you are going to be hearing a familiar voice once again. Andrew is back from Japan, and he has probably 1,000,000,000 stories to tell. And so look forward to that in the next episode of the Wicked Anime Podcast, where we talk to Andrew about his Japan trip and all the experiences that he had over there. So now with that, it's time to sign off the only way we know how. Okay, bye!
Bye.
There is so many good guests that we miss, like Paul Rubens. Did Paul Rubens even have a panel?
Yeah, and I wanted to go to it, but you said no.
Wait, really?
Yes.
When?
Friday.
Huh. I don't even remember.
Yes.
You were bummed out to miss Elijah Wood.
I was a little bummed out, but you know what? Besides just wanting to see his face and his somewhat handsomeness, I haven't really seen anything with him in it that I've loved. Like, I'm not a huge Lord of the Rings person.
Right.
Sorry for those of you who are.
I liked him in The Faculty.
Okay, it would help if I've seen that.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure most of you know, I'm not a huge movie or TV buff. I stick to my classics. I'm branching out. Like, the fact that I even watched Stranger Things while it was still prevalent is important.
That's true.
I just finished watching the show Monk, and that ended 8 years ago. So, I still live in the 80s, even though I was never born then. That made no sense, even though I wasn't born then.